Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast, and today we've got an episode that I've been wanting to do for some time and speaking to some people and trying to find who's interested in doing this episode with me. We're actually going to do this in two parts because one of the people who was going to be with us today unfortunately can't, so we're going to do the first half today and then you will get the second part later when we can bring everyone together. So today our topic is languages and animals, because they're both things that I really care about. I love animals, I love languages, and I thought it would be really interesting to find some people who've managed to combine their interest in language with their interest in animals and topics related to animals, different kinds of animals. So I have three guests with me at the moment today, and we're going to start by finding out a bit about them. So Ruth, could you start by telling us something about your connection to both languages and animals, and also a bit about who you are as well?
Yes, thanks a lot, Kirsty. And that first, I wanted to congratulate you because I think this is episode number 300, and yeah, that's an amazing milestone. So congratulations and thank you for letting us share this special moment with you. Yeah, so as you said, my name's Ruth and I'm a Spanish translator and transcreator. I work from English, French, Italian and Portuguese, and I basically help ethical organizations who are struggling with inconsistent communication, and together we work to find a way to communicate their message more clearly across languages so that they can reach grow their reach and their impact and build trust and secure more funding, which is quite important for them. And about languages, I've always really been quite passionate about languages, even if I didn't realize it at the time. But looking back, I can see that I always had a real fascination with them. And learning a new language feels like a game to me. So first it's all about like decoding how it works. And then once you learn, you start learning a bit about it, how to use it to actually connect and communicate with other people. And I love absolutely every aspect about languages. So the practical side of being able to speak with people in another language, and also the more linguistic bits like grammar, pronunciation, and how meaning is built. And this also, like over time, this interest has also expanded into other things like language justice and power dynamics between languages, and being intentional about how we use language. And in this case, especially about how we use it when we speak about animals.
That's an interesting topic. I might come back to that with because we talk about intentional use of language, but I haven't heard anyone talking about intentional use of language with animals. So yeah, I will make a note of that because I'll come back. But I also think something you said was really interesting about seeing it like a game, because sometimes I think, especially as adults who are learning other languages, we can be really focused on, oh, I have to get it right. I can't make any mistakes. And having that mentality where like it's a game can maybe take some of the stress out of that. Do you think so? Is that how it works for you?
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I try to communicate others as well when they're trying to speak a new language, or when they're trying to learn a new language and communicate. It's like I really try to take a lot of stress out of that and just be like, okay, try to take it as a game. Because that's what it's all about anyway.
It's an adventure. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you for your introduction. And Isabel, who are you, and what's your connection with languages and animals?
Hi, I'm Isabel Memo. Thank you for having me, first of all. Well, I'm a healthcare translator. I work from English and Spanish into Portuguese. within life sciences. I specialize mostly in dentistry, veterinary medicine, medical devices, and clinical trials. My background with language, I've always loved Portuguese, the way we use words to speak and how we use one word instead of the other. So like the intentional use of language, yes, that's it. And I was growing up, and when I was in high school, I had to decide where to go, and I decided to go to sciences. I had to choose an area, and I chose sciences because it was broader. I would have more options later on. But I already there, I thought about translation as an option for me. When I ended high school, I loved animals and I had the grades, so I decided to go to veterinary medicine and I was there for 3 years. And what's interesting, I was never passionate about it. I love animals and I love learning about them, but it required a lot of memorizing. It was really hard study. It was not as technical as I'd like. I think I must enjoy more technical tasks. And it was interesting that when I was studying, we here, at least back then, we had a lot of materials in English and Spanish. Besides the materials that the teacher gave us in Portuguese, the books we read, there were a lot of things in English and Spanish. And when I was studying, I always felt the urge of translating that into Portuguese so that my notes would all be in Portuguese. Yeah, and it was one of the reasons why when I decided, no, I won't follow up with this. I'm not seeing myself as a veterinarian later on. That was one of the reasons why I decided translation, because it was natural to me. I felt that urge. And when I went ended up in I ended up switching to translation. I did a bachelor and a master's, and it was really funny when I was studying translation, my grades suddenly went up like before. I've always been a good student. While I was in veterinary, I was not that much of a good student. When I was in translation, I was back to high grades. So it was a confirmation that I was really loving what I was studying and that I was in the right place.
You found the right thing for you, the right
Yes.
way to use that knowledge. And so, what does that mean for you now? Because you've specialized in this area, but what kind of translation work is there to be done in this specialization? Like, what kind of documents do you work on?
Well, I've worked with several different materials in different content in veterinary. So I've already worked with leaflets for nutraceuticals, with pet food brands in marketing materials, in labels, in blog posts, which were really interesting because there's blog posts for veterinary health professionals and for pet owners, and we have to do it differently. I've also translated devices, veterinary medical devices, manuals and user interface, laboratory devices for veterinary use, apps for veterinarians, training materials, scientific articles. So and I also translate an app for livestock management, for dairy farm management.
And that's for like the end user, the people with the dairy farm. So that's not for the vets, it's for people. So you have
Yes,
very different audiences there, like different levels of knowledge, different
yes, definitely. I think life sciences in general have that requirement. We must know our audience and we must know how to adapt the content to the audience. It's one of the things I'm always defending. We can't forget that.
Otherwise, your end product isn't as useful. If you don't get that right, then people
Yes.
won't get the benefit from it.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have your introduction and Sylvia.
Yeah.
Let's find out about you.
So, hi everyone. Thank you so much for inviting me to this podcast. I'm Silvia from Italy. Nice to meet you, by the way. I'm really happy to be here and share a bit of my story with you today. My interest in languages, my connection with languages, if you prefer, started very early. Really, when I was just a child, first of all, because my mother is a Spanish-speaking person, so I was exposed since when I was a child to her language, and later I remember that she gave me, as a present, an English book for children, and I absolutely loved it. So I started very early to learn and be fascinated by languages. When I had this book, I enjoyed looking at the pictures, listening to the dialogues, memorizing simple words for kids, of course, so colors, animals, and something like that. From that moment, anyway, from that moment, languages always felt something playful and fascinating, not just something to study. Then, later at school, languages were always my favorite subjects, and the ones I felt most comfortable with and excited about, to be honest. So when it was time to choose my path at university, studying foreign languages felt like the most natural decision to me. And I didn't really hesitate because I felt that it was my right path, something that matched who I was and how I saw the world, for example. Over time, that curiosity turned into a profession, and languages became not only something I loved, but also the way I connect with people, cultures, and experiences. And in my career so far, I have worked as a translator, and as a language teacher. As a tour guide, because in the past I also used to take Italian groups abroad for study vacations. Then I, and this is what I want to talk about afterwards, and I also worked as an interpreter at dog shows. So this was my general experience in the language industry, if so a bit of everything, so translation, teaching, tour guiding, and interpreting.
Okay, and how does that work at the dog show? So are you working with the judges and like interpreting their commentary, or are you communicating between the people who work there and the people who are bringing their dogs? What kind of role did you have?
Yes, so my role was to assist the judges in the ring and during the Best in Show. I used to help them write critiques for each dog and communicate with breeders, owners, and handlers. It was an incredibly enjoyable experience because I met many international judges, including some from the Kennel Club in London, and I was exposed to an amazing variety of dog breeds.
That sounds
And
like
it
an
was,
amazing job.
yes. And for example, there were a few breeds that we don't normally see here in Italy. So it was incredible because you can see, for example, some kind of breeds only at dog shows. Because, for example, when you go out for a walk or something, you usually meet, for example, golden retrievers, labradors, cockers, and poodles. But there are really some particular dog breeds which are very uncommon. And if I hadn't attended these dog shows, probably I would have never had the opportunity to meet them. So it was a very nice experience, and it was interesting be also because I learned a very specific terminology related to canine anatomy, movement, appearance, and temperament. So it was something I really enjoyed, definitely.
It sounds fun, but it also sounds like you probably have to do a lot of preparation in advance if you have to find out about these breeds that maybe are not so common, to do quite a lot of research before the dog show, or is it more kind of see who turns up and then work with what you have?
Well, to be honest, I have always been interested in dogs in general because in the past I had a dog and she lived with me for 19 years, so such a long time, and I was very very interested in dogs in general. So I used to read a lot of articles or books about dog breeds or dog's temperament, and just because I liked it. It was a pleasure to learn a few more things about dogs. And so when I started this job at dog shows, I already knew a few breeds, yes, a few breeds or a few characteristics of each dog, of each breed. So it was easier probably, but I must say that I also studied a lot when I had to prepare for this job, because I tried to do research of the, for example, for the relative terminology, no? I was lucky to have a glossary in English and in Italian, which I translated to Italian for my use, and it was very, very useful. It was very useful. So that helped me a lot, and it was quite interesting. And I must say that on a more personal level, I also attended Crofts in Birmingham, but just for pleasure, not for work, just for pleasure. Crofts is the most important dog show in the world, no? When I went there once, I went on the day dedicated to gun dogs, which are my favorite group. And the atmosphere was absolutely unforgettable. I don't know if you have ever been there. You are an animal lover. Probably you should go if you have never gone, because it's incredible, really incredible. It was a very, very positive experience. And I would like to come back, to be honest, because I've never seen such an exhibition like that. It's incredibly incredible, really.
Yeah, I've
And
never been to Crofts, but I've been to, I don't think it runs anymore, but I went to Discover Dogs, which is like the I think whenever Crofts' Discover Dogs was 6 months later, and it was in London, it was like in a big exhibition centre, and they had some of the events that you have at Crofts, but there was also the my favourite part, to be honest, was the part where you could go and meet lots of. They had like a stand for every dog breed, so you could visit the stand and speak with the people there, and also meet the dogs. And because I'm visually impaired and can't see the pictures of the dogs, it was amazing to stroke and talk with some of the breeds that I've never met before. So for me, that was really cool to see. Apart from meeting some lovely dogs, it was really good to know what they look like when it's not the kind of dog that you're going to meet in the park. It's some of
Yes,
the rare breeds, and they were so friendly. It was lovely to meet them. But
really.
yeah. But I don't think that exists anymore. But I imagine, like for all of you, it's about continual professional development. I mean, how does that work for you, Isabel? Keeping your skills and knowledge up to date? Okay, you studied and you have that foundation of knowledge, but how do you ensure that your skills stay up to date with the newest information?
Well, for starters, three of my best friends are veterinarians.
This is
So,
useful.
yeah, I have quick access to and easy to access to terminology. You know, I heard them, I hear them speak. There's actually one thing that happened some years ago. When I was translating for a pet food brand, and I was doing regular translations for a blog they had for both veterinarian health professionals and pet owners, and I was talking to her, and we came. I don't know how that came about, but I learned that the industry, the veterinarian industry in Portugal was letting go of the term owner and starting to use the term tutor in Portuguese, tutor.
Okay.
So instead of pet owner, we now call pet tutor, tutores de animais de
I like
estimação.
that. It's less kind of trans like you belong to me, you are my dog. It's a much nicer way to look at it. It's
That's the purpose of it, of that change. And well, I suggested it, making that change in the term base to the client, and they checked with the Portuguese, the Portuguese department, and they came back with a very positive feedback, saying, "Oh, it's right. It's actually changing. We should have implemented it before. Thank you for noticing." And so, thanks to my very good friend, I earned some points there.
because language is always changing, isn't it? It's like a funnel.
Yes, but I also, like, in LinkedIn, I have a lot of connections from my time in the university in veterinary medicine. When I was in the veterinary medicine course, I have a lot of connections from there. So I see a lot of posts related to veterinary medicine, like scientific articles published, talking about the what's happening in the industry. I also follow some key pages, both related to more scientific areas, medical devices, all related to veterinary, so that I can keep up to date. I've also attended last year. I attended the biggest veterinary congress in Iberia, the Montenegro Congress, which was held here near Porto, and that was really interesting to feel the industry, talk to the brands, to people who work within the industry, both veterinarians and suppliers and manufacturers. It was really interesting.
Yeah, I think this is what I've heard a lot of people saying from like translators who go to events that are, yeah, for translators is good. That's a different kind of event, but going to the events where the clients are, where people are talking about the topics that are relevant to your field, is actually really valuable for making new connections, especially when there are not many translators around as well. That can also be a good
Yeah.
thing, but for you to find new people to.
Yeah, I might have been the only translator there.
This is the best thing, isn't it? You're rememberable now because you're
Yes, yeah.
not in a, lost in a sea of translators.
Yeah, but it's not only for the connections. I think it's good to know to feel how the industry is going, to have a real sense of what's happening. And I also got to talk to people there. I went to several stations and asked about how they dealt with translations in their company. So that gave me extremely useful information for my work and how I should approach clients, potential clients, and also what I should expect from working in that area.
Yeah, so it's like a useful day. And is that every year they do that, this event, or is that
Yes,
not?
it is annual, usually in October, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. And I wonder, Ruth, is that the same with Spanish? This idea about not being a pet owner, is there anything similar in Spanish? Have you heard?
Yeah, definitely. And that's quite related with what I mentioned before about being intentional with the way you use language to talk about animals. And that's definitely what we do as well. We speak about tutores and tutors and not owners.
And can you think of any more examples that kind of show this idea of about how we can be more intentional with language in relation to animals? Are there
Yeah,
any,
well,
that's putting you on the spot a bit, really, but if you've got any ideas?
in general, also because I work in a different area, it's quite interesting that we all work in different areas but related to animals somehow. Because I work more, I'm specialized in human rights and third sector and slow fashion and retail. So I've transferred my skills from there to working with marketing copy and product descriptions for animal related brands, like, I don't know, toys, treats, clothing, and rescue equipment. And also to work on projects, translation projects related more with advocacy and awareness campaigns for shelters and conservation organizations. So my work is more, I think it looks at it from like a different perspective. And so we try, obviously we need to be like very intentional with language and, for example, try not to talk about dogs or talk about animals in general as objects or use patronizing language when we talk about them.
To try and educate the public as well, like, so that they can follow by example.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, yeah, we try to educate, and but we also follow trends, like, I have two rescue dogs, so I spent quite a lot of time in the dog scene world and surrounded by people who live with dogs, cats, and other animals. So I do have access to, like, I know firsthand how people talk about the animals with whom they share their lives and how they like brands and organizations to talk about them as well. And yeah.
And this is something that is, I guess, is going across languages as well. So before we, before I will come back to you about, no, actually, let's do that first. How do you stay up to date as well, your professional development? Is that through your work with the other organizations that you work with to know about, changes in language, or how do you make sure that you stay up to date professionally as well?
Yeah, well, what I do is I follow shelters and conservation organizations and other brands like animal related brands. I follow them closely and on social media. And I also stay in touch with people who work in these areas as well. And I am something that I do very often as well. I go down to my local shop, for example, and check the kind of products that they sell, the kind of products that are more popular and less popular, and how that changes, and how they speak the language that brands use. And that even like shop tenders use to speak about the things that they sell.
Yeah, because I guess that as well changes like what may have been a good advertising technique 10, 15 years ago is not necessarily going to work now in terms of the language people want
And the thing
to.
is, like, for example, I don't translate about vet supplies. And whenever I've been asked, I've said, well, I'm not, that's not really like what I can help with. I can help with other kind of things like creative content or more kind of content that's target to defend animals' rights, for example. So there's not so much reading or so much formal training about this as just living or learning from experience and from like your day-to-day exchanges.
Yeah, I think that's important. Okay, and I just wanted to finish off as well for this point to ask Sylvia about the we've had this example of pet owner and how it's changing in Spanish and Portuguese. Is it the same in Italian? Are there any changes to how people talk about their animals or their role in relation to their animals?
To be honest, no, I don't think so. No.
No, I haven't seen it in English either. I would like to see a nicer term, but I can't say that I have seen any in English. So maybe
Well,
that's
in English, the term,
okay.
sorry,
No, this
pet
isn't my area,
parents.
so I'd be interested to know if
Pet
there is one.
parents, it's being used
I don't love
increasingly.
that, to be honest.
Yeah, it
I
really
think
depends on how
this
you see the
word.
pets.
I think that can be a bit like that can also be a bit patronizing for me. I don't
I can
know.
see that.
Or
I can see
tutors
that.
is being used in English as well.
Is it?
I
Okay.
can
Oh,
send you
okay.
some links later on if you want.
Yeah, I can get behind that a bit more.
Definitely, yeah.
Because sometimes people can like humanize their animals too much to the point where the animals' needs aren't really being considered. I think that's why I don't like pet parents. It's because like people are projecting what they want from the animal rather than what the animal's natural needs are. I don't know, maybe I'm looking into this too much, but that's. And I guess if we can kind of encourage people not to do that as much, we're also making a better life for the animals. I don't know. I'm sure I've seen that as well, pet parents. I didn't think about it, but yeah, I have seen it. But I think maybe we can do better in English. So yeah, if tutors are being used, then yeah, maybe that's the way to go. But it's I love the way that language doesn't stay still. And it's about thinking about what we actually want to say rather than just what is the best word, but it's like what do we want to communicate with this word? But yeah, it's an interesting discussion. And we've mentioned a couple of people have mentioned their animals, and I know that Isabel has a dog as well. One or two?
Yeah, well, I have two dogs,
Two
but
dogs.
they live with my parents.
Okay.
They're rescue dogs also. I had two dogs before these two dogs who were also rescued, and they were the first dogs in the family, and those were my dogs. Like, I had a special connection to them. These ones are more my parents' dogs than mine, but I'm also responsible for them. I'm the one who takes them to the veterinary, who manages their schedule. So
Oh.
I understand what Ruth was saying about. I also do that when I go to the vet hospital or the clinic or even the store. I tend to look at products and read them from the translator's perspective, like, why did they use this? Oh, that's interesting. Or, well,
That's wild.
they could write it better. So, yeah, also, I tend to do that as well. And I understand that it's different. It's a different perspective. Yeah. And it's also contributes to our profession. Yeah. It helps speaking better to the target audience. That's also important. That's always important.
Yeah, you're in touch with what they want, what they think. And do
Yes.
any of you have your animals on your social media? I know one of you does. On your
Yes.
website.
Yes, so many. Well, yes, my pets are very much present in my social media.
They're the marketing team.
At the moment, I'm sharing my life with two cats only. So I have no dogs at the moment, just two cats, and they are my great loves. And for example, my Facebook page is full of their photos, usually caught in funny or tender poses. They are very much part of my everyday life. And part of my online presence as well, of course. And in the past, as I said before, I had a dog who lived with me for 19 years. She was a rescue dog, and she was a cross between an English setter and a Brittany. And not because I was her owner, but she was truly a special dog, gentle, intelligent, deeply connected to me. And she left a very strong mark on my life. She passed away 11 years ago. But I think of her with a lot of affection today as well. So at the moment, as I said, I don't have a dog, but I often feel that one day another dog will find their way into my life and into my heart as well, because I really love both cats and dogs, I must say, because they are different but similar in many ways. So, for example, with my two cats, people say that cats are much more independent, for example. Yes, probably it's true, but I must say that my cats don't like when they are at home alone, for example, because. When I go out and then I come back, I find all their toys around. So it means that I went to pick them up and go around the house with their toys. And then sometimes they believe, probably they believe that they are at home alone, and they start. So. Yes, they are more independent compared to dogs, because you don't have to take them out for a walk, but they really like company, and they really like to be petted, to be and. It's they are a great company and a great presence in my everyday life, and really I can't live without any pet around. So
Yeah.
cat or dog is the same, but I really like to have them. They are my joy, my they when I work they like to be around, for example, and they jumped on my legs, and sleep there while I write on my computer and something like that.
They're your colleagues. You have colleagues in the room with you. But I think it's true that I know that my dog passed away over, it's about the same time actually, 11 years ago, Cindy, the golden retriever. And she was a working dog. She was a guide dog. But her photo is still on my website because I can't take it down. She was such a part of the setting up of my business and all this time when everything was new and I was trying to like, I must make this work. I need this idea to work. And she was there, she was listening. Like animals are great listeners. And yeah, now I have a picture there because I think that if people see that you like animals, it will also bring people who like animals and
Yes,
many.
I also used to when I was a student at university, I used to work as a dog sitter, for example, and it was nice because I it helped me to pay for my studies, and apart from that, it was really it was I could escape a little bit from my routine, my everyday routine at university, so studies, and take the train and go to university and then come back. So it was very nice, and I used to go to dogs nearly every day. Yes, and I also had some cats. To look after too when their parents weren't at home. Right now, I don't really do dog sitting anymore, just cat sitting sometimes because it's easier just for
Yeah,
that.
but they are
It's
they're good company. And Ruth, I know you have dogs as well. Are they part of your social media? Do we see your
yes.
dogs on the?
Definitely, yeah. In my case, yeah, my dogs are usually present in my posts too, and they also have a very prominent presence of my on my new website. I think I told you.
You did. I wasn't going to mention it in case it was a secret
Yes,
that you didn't want on the podcast, but if it's not
yeah.
a
I guess
secret,
I
it's fine.
actually haven't quite launched it yet, but so okay.
Now everybody wants to see them because they know that these dogs exist in the
and.
world.
Yeah, and I have to say that as with everything else, like I also try when I include pictures of them or I talk about them, I also try to do it intentionally and again not talk about them as belongings or being patronizing because that's not the way I relate with
Yeah.
to them, or at least I try not to do it that way. And then to be honest, like animals come up quite naturally in my professional relationships as well. I don't know what it's like what it's like for you, but I often end up exchanging stories with my clients about our dogs, cats, or other animals that we live with, and I think it's like a very, very like nice way of connecting on a new, more like kind of personal level too. Yeah,
Yeah, I
I think it builds
agree. I
trust.
agree.
Like, I don't know, like we keep like exchanging pictures of our dogs, our cats, and this and that, and yeah. And even
Well,
like having meetings like on the phone while you're walking with your dogs and your client or the other person is walking with their dogs too, and it's like really funny trying to have a meeting like that.
I must say I'm hearing your stories about working with your dogs and our cats by your side, and I'm missing a bit of my dog because I don't have dogs with me right now, living with me right now, but I will have one day, I'm sure. I don't have, but I have two kids too, so I need them to grow up a bit. Before I get a dog, we just recently moved to a big house, so we'll have space for a dog. And I wanted, yeah, but it's been a while. My first dog, she passed away 5 years ago. Yeah, and she was. I had that special connection that both Kirsty and Sylvia were talking about the first dog, and that was my partner. She actually went to veterinary school with me. Yeah, she lived with me. I was in a different city when I was studying veterinary, and she lived with me in the apartment. And there were some classes where I could take her with me, theoretical classes, and it was really, it was good to have that companion. Yeah, so I understand that I'm looking forward to having that again, like a fur partner here in
Yeah,
my house.
the right animal will find you. And me too, I hope. Maybe not in this house where I'm living now because it's not great. We have quite a lot of stairs, and I think for an older dog that might be quite difficult. But somewhere else, then yeah, another retriever or another dog. Maybe it won't be a retriever, but who knows? But yeah, they have a habit of finding you. Just before, as we're coming to the end now, just one final question to ask you what you would advise people who are either beginning their career in language work or people who want to change their career because they've done something else before and now they want to move into a different type of work. But people who want to combine this interest in animals, either professionally because they've studied like Isabel, or because it's something that's their hobby, something they really care about and know more about that way. What advice could you give to people who are thinking of combining these two areas of their lives, so language skills and studies and an interest in animals? Do you have any tips?
I for example, if someone is interested, I don't know if for example in the UK or abroad you have an interpreter at the dog shows, which help, who helps the judges, to be honest. I'm not sure about that. But for example, in Italy, if you are interested in this kind of role, I can suggest to get in touch with local dog clubs, for example, and you can propose yourself as an interpreter if you speak languages, and it's better if you have a little bit of knowledge about the dog world, for example. As I said before, when I started this job, I also had a previous interest in dogs, and which allowed me to learn many things about the dogs. So, for example, anatomy or movement or appearance. But apart from that, the glossary I had, which was sent to me by a judge from the Kennel Club in London, and I translated it into Italian. It was very helpful, and it helped me understand judges more accurately and allowed me to be much more precise when assisting them. And I believe that is very important when you know the right terminology for the language work you are doing, because when you truly understand the field that you are working in, communication becomes clearer and more effective for sure. So probably if you are interested in this kind of role, you must study a lot, words, and stay up to date, and as I said before, perhaps get in touch with dog clubs, local dog clubs, or try to find out more on websites or online. There are many clubs, many dog clubs that have a website, so perhaps you can ask. But as I said before, I'm not sure if abroad there is this kind of role, because when I went to crafts, I didn't see anyone who was working as an interpreter or translator for the judges. to be honest. And I think we don't have it here in Italy any longer now, because because when there was the stop due to COVID pandemic, of course everything changed, and I believe that the role of the interpreter is no longer possible. But I'm not sure about that. So maybe what I'm saying is not the right information. But I believe that it's not possible anymore to work as interpreter of the judges.
That's a shame because
Yes.
maybe in some bigger, I mean, I don't know the answer either, but maybe in some bigger shows, it's still if you've got.
I believe that because the last dog show I attended as interpreter, it was in January 2020, so just before the pandemic. I believe that the reason is because when you do this work, you had to be next to the judge. So. And write what is critique and translate to the breeders or owners or and help him communicate. But I believe that it was just a matter of social distancing at that time. But probably now, well, now it's no longer we have no longer that problem. But they have decided to go on this way anyway. So. But it's a
Yeah,
shame. Yeah, I agree with you.
it is. Sounds like a lot of fun. How about Isabel, Ruth, do you have any tips for people?
Well, if you were saying about people who are in veterinary or working with animals and want to start translating,
Yeah, who want to have a
yeah.
career change or people who want to
Okay.
specialize in animal related areas of translation.
I'm not sure, but I guess I would advise would always advise having some type of training in translation, making sure they have good language skills, but also learning translation itself, because knowing two languages is not enough to translate. It's really important to know the specifics and the skills that you have to have and what you should respect and follow while translating. So I would recommend doing some type of training first and then exploring the market.
And Ruth, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would add to what Sylvia and Isabel have already mentioned. It's like if you can go into this type of translation, then definitely do it. And when I say if you can, I say it like very consciously, because like I'm aware like not everybody's in a position to choose what they do or what they work on. So if you have that privilege, then I think it's definitely worth exploring. And now if you're specifically going or considering the possibility of going into translating about animal rights or for like shelters or marketing copy related to animal products, then again, like you don't have to go into it straight away. You can start like if this is not like a new specialization for you, you can start little by little and block like a small amount of time each week to kind of stay like spend some time with this subject, reading or following people. You can start following other translators who work in this area or who are showing like an interest in this area, and you can follow like animal focus brands and shelters, vegan brands, and see how people are talking about this, because like in this area, like the way language is used is not static, like it's constantly evolving. And it's not so much about doing like specific training you might have to do for vet devices and equipment, but it's more about choosing how you want to communicate about animals. And again, like going back to the intentional use of language and what values you want to reflect, and like staying away from certain cliches and old formulas. And yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, especially if it's something that's new, that maybe most of your money is going to be coming from somewhere else, doing something that you know that you have experience in, and that you can build these things up gradually. It's not maybe realistic to think that it's going to be a switch and then you suddenly find all this work and it's amazing. Life doesn't always work like that. So if you
No.
give yourself some, if this is the thing that you really enjoy, give yourself some time that to look for that, but also to sometimes there's like a another chunk of work which isn't what we love the most, but we will need to pay the bills and
And
but
then also you can obviously like give yourself the chance to try it and then try it for a while, and then if at some point you realize that this is not really for you, then it's okay. You can just say goodbye to that and try something else.
Yeah, I think that's what I wanted to show this episode as well, that we have people with very different backgrounds, but we also have within this area so many different types of work that you can do, so many different types of documents, different audiences, so that it gives people an idea of what is out there, what's available. And if one thing doesn't really fit, maybe something else will. So it's a case of knowing what is required where there's a need, but also what kind of work you want to be doing or what you want to add to what you're already offering. Or maybe not. Maybe you just are listening to this episode because you love animals and that's fine too. Because this is part one, we do have some more topics to talk about, and there is one more person who's going to be joining us. So we're going to stop here now. But there is part two that will be coming sometime soon in the future. So if you enjoyed this, we haven't finished. We'll be back with part two. But for now, thank you for sharing your ideas, your experiences, your love of animals and languages to everyone. Thanks for coming on the podcast. And yeah, I hope you can join us in part two.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.